Hello, it's Wednesday, October 11th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Glad everybody's tuning in today. Our subject is going to be war. But we're going to do so in a rational way today. We're not going to become hysterical. We're not going to rant and rave like lunatics. We're not going to be wild-eyed conspiracy theorists. And we're not going to peddle tons and tons of fear-mongering, so by the end of this show, you're underneath your bed. If you want this kind of show, they're easy to find in the mainstream media, and they're easy to find in the alternative media. So if you're one of the fear junkies that wants to get hammered on the head for 3 hours so that you run and hide under your bed, you know where to go. We're not going to do that on Wing TV today. Instead, we're going to take a level-headed approach and kind of take a glance at where we are in the world today. The latest report that came out within the last day or so was issued by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The primary researcher was a guy named Dr. Gilbert Burnham. And this is a controversial report where he says that there are nearly 655,000 dead Iraqis now because of our war with Iraq.
Wow.
Now,
just incredible.
When you consider reports that say that there are over 12,000 dead U.S. servicemen there instead of the regularly cited number of 2,700 or so, what we're doing is starting to get near Vietnam numbers already.
What a massive number. 655,000.
Yeah. Now, this report hasn't been verified yet, and as I said, it's controversial, so it's going to take a couple days or a couple weeks for everything to come out in the wash, as they say. But the thing to remember is,
what's his source?
Well, like I this is a individual that published a similar report in October of 2004,
mm-hmm.
prior to an election. So as I said, it's controversial, and it's being timed to coincide with elections. So we have to look at this.
Right.
With fresh eyes and see if it is accurate or not. But the thing I think is most important to remember is that if you don't think that people are fixing casualty numbers in war, all you have to do is go back to Vietnam, Robert McNamara, who pathologically lied about the numbers.
Well, look at how they're fixing everything else.
Exactly. So that's a good way to start, a good way to put this in perspective, is that if Dr. Gilbert Burnham's numbers are correct, he says 655,000 dead Iraqis, which is just an amazing number.
It's a disgrace.
Secondly, everybody's heard about the supposed nuclear test in North Korea last weekend. But now there's people coming out and say maybe there wasn't even any kind of nuclear test at all. Maybe they're trying to pull a ruse on us. And I know that this is making it into the mainstream because last night when I was eating supper, I was clicking through the channels, and Wolf Blitzer was interviewing Condoleezza Rice, and he asked, did they really have a nuclear test
uh-huh.
in North Korea? And Condoleezza says, well, we assume so.
They assume so?
Right. Now, there's a report in the Washington Times by Bill Gertz, who's saying, based on preliminary indications, North Korea didn't produce a nuclear blast over the weekend.
Who generated the report?
Well,
was it the Pentagon?
No, this came right out of North Korea. That they said
uh-huh.
that they had a nuclear test. But when you go into how this registers on the Richter scale, what type of explosives, the readings on the seismic scale, and so forth, there's debate now as to whether they actually had an authentic nuclear test, or if this was just a huge blast of several thousand tons of TNT. Nobody really knows. So,
and considering that we can't trust official statements or mainstream media reports, we may never really know.
Well, exactly. What U.S. officials speaking under terms of anonymity, of course, are saying that the blast recordings were shy of what would be a nuclear blast, and they're saying that this appears to be more fizz than pop. So, as Lisa said, it's hard for us to comment any further than that because what we're relying on is reports from North Korea and from our own government. Neither entity that we trust at
all. Neither entity is a credible source of information.
Right. Now, another thing, Lisa. When we talk about war in the Middle East, and everyone's saying, when are we going to nuke Iran? When are we going to take out their nuclear facilities? Here's a good way to start this conversation. When Iranian President Ahmadinejad spoke last month at the United Nations, following his speech, he appeared where? At the Council on Foreign Relations. Now think of this. The Council on Foreign Relations, New York City. This is one of the premier nests of globalist power in the entire world. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is the world's number one threat, the number one enemy. He's the one that's going to start World War III. But is he really a threat to the power structure? Is he really? Well, let's look at it this way. Pretend the CFR was the mafia, okay? And the mafia keeps talking about an informant that's going to go to the feds or a rival gang member that's going to mow them all down and kill them. What if this informant or this rival member walked into their family enclave, okay? All the guys, and I mean family as in, you know, the family. Now, all the wise guys are sitting around the table. They have their cigars. They're playing cards. They have their drinks. And they have their guns on the table. And here's the biggest threat to the mafia there is. What do you think the mafia is going to do to this guy, Lisa, if he walks into their midst? They're going to kill him. If this guy's the biggest threat there is to the mafia, they're going to kill him. There's going to be a hail of bullets, a volley of gunfire, and this guy is going to be dead. They're going to carry him out of there in a wooden box.
Well, I don't know that they can just go ahead and kill Ahmadinejad.
Well,
that would spark something even greater.
Well, think about this. The CFR has all their sharpshooters, their Navy SEALs, their special forces, their hired assassins. Now, they wouldn't kill him right inside the
CFR.
Yeah,
but that would be too overt for him to get wasted now. It would be like the law going to a protest and rounding people up at a protest. It's too overt. It's too blatant. It's too transparent.
But for the most dangerous man in the world, supposedly Osama bin Laden is the most dangerous man in the world. And he's hiding out in Pakistan or he's in Afghanistan somewhere. And his life is in such danger that he can't show his face anywhere because he'll be killed on the spot. This is the big threat to the world. But Ahmadinejad strolls into the CFR just like he strolled into the United Nations, big grin on his face, and he's chatting with everybody. And there were reports that Ahmadinejad had everybody at the CFR flustered. And all the Israelis there refused to meet with them. But who filed these reports? How do we get this information? Well, supposedly it came from the CFR itself.
Oh, boy.
And the mainstream media.
Well, there you go.
So, they're putting a spin on these reports.
Yeah, what we do know is that there is an international competition for the energy resources. Who's going to control them?
Yeah.
We do know that.
So when Ahmadinejad walks in there, is he nothing more than controlled opposition? Opposition in quotation marks? And if he was truly a threat, would he walk out of there alive? Would he really do that? They just sat down and they had a nice chat. The CFR and their number one enemy. Nice little chat.
You know,
and he walks back out.
We're not going to be able to find out what really went on in there if the reports are coming directly from the CFR themselves. They also are not a credible source of information.
Right. Now, a couple of days ago, I was talking to Frank Whalen, who has a show, of course, on RBN, Frankly Speaking Radio, and one of the most level-headed guys out there. He doesn't resort to sensationalism or this ranting and raving lunacy. And we're talking about the subject of war. And it turned to North Korea, of course, because of these supposed tests. And Frank was saying, basically, is if we invade or if we attack North Korea and take them out, what if we then use that as we, meaning the United States government, use that as a prototype for Iran?
Hmm.
You know, and what they would say, the government, of course, is, can't everybody see the similarities between North Korea and Iran? Look how North Korea built up to where they're at, and now they have nukes, and Iran's doing the same thing.
Iran and Syria are both building up their defenses in preparation for an inevitable impending conflict with the Anglo-American alliance.
Exactly. So, the rationale is going to be, if we don't bomb Iran, it's going to be the same exact situation as North Korea. So, we might as well just do it now, before they become any more of a threat.
And whatever this talk is, this rhetoric of diplomacy, it's just political posturing. It's just public theater. It's for the benefit of you out there, all around the world.
Right. Because the road to war doesn't happen overnight. With our invasion of Iraq, the preparations was anywhere from 12 to 18 months. So if there's already a set date...
There was one article that said the groundwork was laid over a period of 10-plus years to get the conditions just materializing the way they wanted so they could occupy.
Exactly. Yeah, so this... Remember, the powers that be rarely, if ever... make snap decisions or snap movements. In other words, this is a long, methodical process. And what we're seeing is, as Lisa said, the political theater. And here's another scenario. What if, very conveniently, the government conveniently finds a dirty bomb or a suitcase nuke in one of our cities, right at the last minute, right before the terrorists... we're supposed to set it off.
And we don't know that that would really be happening because we can't trust the official statements and the mainstream media reports.
And very conveniently, when they find this suitcase nuke, they're going to turn it over and there's going to be a stamp on the back of it, made in Iran. Now, of course, it won't say that exactly, but there'll be all these indicators that it came from Iran. So thank God the government found it in the nick of time and... look at it. It came from Iran. So, you know, and then, of course, where did Iran get the nuclear materials from? North Korea, the axis of evil. So you see how it's all...
or Russia.
Yeah, it's all coming together. Now, here's another thing, Lisa, and we've talked about this a little bit, is we have Mahmoud Ahmadinejad over in Iran. And he talks a lot about something called the 12th Imam, the prophecy of the 12th Imam. And you have to look at this one of two ways. Either Ahmadinejad knows the handshake, I'm sure everybody knows what that means, where he's part of the cabal, part of this global cabal, or he really believes this stuff about the apocalypse. And he's being used as a useful idiot and being manipulated to bring about his part of Armageddon. You know, so... look at it this way. Adolf Hitler was financed by the American elite, by the European power structure, and by Jewish bankers. And he worked in unison during the war with the Zionists. And this has been brought out in the show by Jim Conda Jr. and Christopher John Bjerknes.
Mm-hmm.
So when Hitler is being used as this useful idiot, how can we trust any of these leaders on the world stage?
Right, well, there are some people out there today who still think that Hitler was the greatest thing since sliced bread and that people are just misled about Hitler, that he really wasn't such a bad guy.
Yeah, and of course, this is fringe extremists that think this. But the point we're trying to make is that every one of these leaders is fulfilling a role or they have their part to play in this global drama.
Right, right.
You know, so another example, Hugo Chavez, when he went to Harlem, and started giving away oil. And everybody's saying, ooh, look how good this Hugo Chavez is. He's a socialist, but he's treating our people better than the American government's treating
them. What's his agenda? And why isn't he telling the truth? Why isn't he exposing this administration and the powers beyond and above this administration in the United States about the events of 9/11? He has been informed.
Yeah. And being now that he's a very extreme socialist...
and that's assuming he didn't know before.
Yeah, bordering on being a communist, and he's being hailed as such a good guy, wouldn't this pave the way for Hillary, the socialist, in 2008? So see, all these little pieces keep fitting together, including Bob Woodward's book.
Right, and remember, nothing in politics happens by accident. It's all by design.
Exactly. So Woodward has this book where he says we need a change in regard to the war, but we don't really need a big change. We just need a superficial change.
We don't, huh?
I.e., that the GOP blew it, so let's just hand everything over to the Democrats. So we're not going to stop the war on terror by any means. Let's just change it from the Republicans over to the Democrats. So there's no big dramatic change.
We'll just change names of the war pigs.
Yeah. So what we see here, and this is going to make a lot of people mad that are in either the Bush camp or the Ahmadinejad camp, is that these guys are really two sides of the same coin. They're both perceived, or they both convey the image of being these extreme religious fundamental figures. George Bush, the good Christian.
That's going to make a lot of people mad to show similarities between the two.
Yeah.
Because the perception of a lot of people is that they are vastly different.
No.
But that, remember, perception's everything.
Yeah.
And who shapes your perception?
Yeah. So George Bush, the good Christian, the rapture, the end times, the apocalypse, and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad with the 12th Imam, who's going to facilitate the arrival of this apocalyptic figure who's going to appear before the end of the world. As we said on our show a week or so ago, who's facilitating the move to war? George Bush is, and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is, as is Israel.
Absolutely.
Also.
Yeah, Israel is playing a central role in the war that we're currently in and the war that is on our doorstep, just like they played a central role in the events of 9/11.
Yeah. So, remember, it's only going to take one event to dramatically change life in this world.
Or one purported perceived event.
Right. One nuke. One terrorist event. And it could be very, very awful, and it could change all of our ways of life. So, this is something we all have to be very cognizant of. When it comes to North Korea, we have the political figures out there, Lisa. Hillary Clinton, blame it all on George Bush.
Right.
John McCain, blame it all on Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
So we have this partisan nonsense. Meanwhile, over in Japan, they're saying no more North Korean ships. Mm-hmm. Coming into Japan, into Japanese ports. No more imports. So they're ratcheting things up over there. And let's talk a little bit about...
Yeah, the world is rapidly spiraling into chaos.
Yeah. So.
But is it a controlled chaos?
Well, absolutely.
So far.
In my opinion, I believe it's a controlled chaos. Now, Lisa, we're going over an article about the march to war, the buildup in the Persian Gulf and the Eastern Mediterranean.
Uh-huh.
I want to know what your thoughts are on where we're heading here.
Well, this is a very long article, and it's very detailed, and it's very scary. It's scary for what lies ahead for the future of humanity. And it looks like there's a huge naval buildup, a military buildup in both the Persian Gulf and the Eastern Mediterranean. These are the two distinct theaters where we're seeing a large, significant deployment of U.S. and NATO troops. And Israel, of course, is right in the middle of it, wedged right in there in typical form. It's scary. It's very, very scary. It's depressing. And despite public protest from people in various countries, the governments of the involved countries are forging ahead.
Right. And it seems like the two big... As Lisa said, the two primary factors are, on one end, the United States, who's leading this,
mm-hmm.
and on the other is this joint coalition between Israel and NATO forces.
Right.
So between the two, they're the ones that are gearing everything up toward there. And as we said, this isn't something that happens overnight. D-Day took years to prepare for.
Uh-huh.
Years. This
right.
D-Day, you remember the big invasion, it was Operation Overlord. They didn't snap their fingers and do it. Same way if you look at the Downing Street memo. The decision to invade Iraq in 2003 was already laid on the table in 2002. So
right.
We don't have a crystal ball right now.
No, but the probability of another war in the Middle East is very, very high right now. Right now we're at the crossroads, and it's extremely important that citizens all over the world rise up and confront their governments on what they are undertaking with this militarization in the Middle East.
But see, that's the problem. People can't rise up and confront their governments because people don't have access to their government any longer. When there were these 220 anti-war protests last week across the United States, how many government officials were actually confronted? Probably zero. And see, that's the problem, is our federal government and global government as a whole has become so out of touch and out of reach of the everyday citizen that we can't confront them any longer. These are monstrous elitists that are doing all this planning far out of touch of everyday human beings.
Yeah, this article that we've been looking at talks even about how the United States manipulated war between Iran and Iraq in the 80s, and then during the period of 1991 to 2003, how Iraq's strength was diluted and Iraq was weakened. And the U.S. manipulation of the war between Iran and Iraq was used to weaken both of those countries to prepare for future military operations against them by the United States and its partners.
Right. And the Pentagon has already drawn up war plans. They're on the table already against Iran as well as Syria. And what we're going to face over there then, Lisa, is if we go in, one of the primary objectives that the globalists want anyway is to keep the Straits of Hormuz open.
Right.
It's called the energy lifeline of the world.
Right. Any conflict with Iran and Syria is expected, as we've pointed out numerous times in the past, it's expected to be unlike anything we've seen thus far in the war that we're currently engaged in. It's going to be wider in scope. It's anticipated to be much deadlier and to have active aerial and naval fronts involved in it.
Yeah, and some of the things that the United States has over there now in the Middle East and their preparations is they have the early warning units, they have reconnaissance units, amphibious elements, search and rescue units, minesweepers, and rapid deployment units. And the experts are saying the United States doesn't put all those factors in place unless there's something behind it. They don't just do this as an exercise. This is ratcheting it up.
Well, Iran's been preparing for some type of military conflict with the United States for almost a decade. And everybody should realize that Iran's military forces are known to be well-structured militarily. They possess advanced military capabilities. And, you know, if you compare them to Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Lebanon, they far exceed the capabilities of those other four countries in defending themselves.
That's
Plus, they're
right.
also getting help. They're getting help from Russia.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And another thing,
Syria.
Before we continue on with these preparations, and this was a point that Frank Whalen brought up. He said that if you look at gasoline prices, and they've dropped about 25% over the last couple months or so, and he says, realizing how strategic the Strait of Hormuz is and the Persian Gulf, he says, think of all this as an experiment with the gasoline prices. What they did was they jacked it up as high as they could to see if the market could bear it. So here, the highest gasoline prices got was $3.39. A few months ago, it was $2.99 a gallon. The powers that be realized that the market can handle gasoline or oil that's $80 a barrel and over $3 a gallon at the pump. So what they do now is they bring it back down before the election, realizing that...
It's just manipulation.
Right. Realizing that when and if we do invade Iran, they have this cushion now. Gasoline, say, $2.20 a gallon. There's going to be some kind of turmoil in the Straits. Gas or oil isn't going to be able to be shipped as readily as it is now. And they know that, well, the market can handle $80 a barrel gasoline, $3.40 at the pumps. So they already performed the experiment to see what we can handle, so they have their cushion.
Right. Analysts have also warned that Iranian forces could conceivably shut down or close off the Persian Gulf and turn it into this big shooting gallery
right.
if they're attacked. And they are in possession of submarine-to-surface missiles, anti-ship missiles. Some of these are reported to be the world's fastest. They can go 225 miles an hour. They're designed to destroy large submarines, and most vessels are said to not even be able to escape from them.
That's right.
If they even manage to get onto their radar. So the U.S. would have to keep the Straits of Hormuz open. They'd have to keep international oil traffic running at the same time while simultaneously fending off Iranian missiles from land, sea, and air.
Yeah.
No pressure there, right?
Exactly. And Colonel Gardner from the National War College has even gone so far as to say that, given what we already know, that a lot of this deployment, a lot of these, this preparation for war is going to take place anywhere between October 2nd and October 21st of this year. Well, today is October 11th, so we're right in this crucial time now where things are being set up. And could this be the real October surprise that everyone's been talking about, not this Mark Foley little
distraction
scandal.
Now, regarding Lebanon, NATO's officially moved in to fill the vacuum, according to this article that we read, left by the war in Lebanon, as it officially did with the case of Afghanistan. NATO has also signed a military cooperation agreement with Israel last year. And these troops could become an occupation force there, just like they did with Afghanistan. And by the way, the Israeli ground forces have not fully withdrawn from South Lebanon per the UN resolution and ceasefire, which we really weren't expecting them to withdraw.
Well,
anyway.
I'm glad you brought that up because, in all honesty, Lisa, I think we'd already be in a war with Iran right now, except for two things. The powers that be thought that our little war in Iraq would go much smoother than it already has went. Well, as we know, it's a disaster. It's an unmitigated disaster. Secondly, when Israel invaded Lebanon, they thought they would sweep right through there and everything would be in place then for the Israeli, the IDF, to just keep moving toward Iran and Syria. Well, Iraq turned out to be a disaster, and by all accounts, the public perception is that Israel lost the war with Hezbollah.
Yugoslavia was a disaster. Afghanistan has been a disaster. Iraq, a disaster. Lebanon, a disaster.
Right.
Why would any impending conflict with Iran and Syria not also result in ultimate disaster? Yeah. Let's talk about Russia and China a little
bit.
The Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China have also deployed troops in Lebanon. Now, their strategic objectives at this point seem a little unclear, at least to me. There's also a Russian naval presence on the Syrian seashore. Now, the Chinese presence in Lebanon has been under the authority of a small UN peacekeeping force. Don't you like how they use the word peacekeeping force? That's about like 200 military engineers that have been working for the UN clearing landmines and ordinances. But they're set to send another 1,000 Chinese troops to be added to the Chinese military presence there in Lebanon.
Right. And when you talk about a world war, the word world is in there for a reason. A lot of people said, oh, the Cold War with Russia, that was really World War III, and we're going into World War IV. Well, that's not true, because it was only two superpowers, and there was no actual war. A world war means that the entire globe becomes involved in it, or large sections, just like World War I and World War II. Well, what do we have right now, Lisa? We have North Korea and China. That's Asia. We have Iran, Syria, Israel, and Lebanon. That's the Middle East. We have Hugo Chavez putting his two cents in. That's South America. We have the Europeans, who are obviously going to weigh in one side or the other.
Well, you've got troops from Italy, Spain, Germany, Turkey, Canada, Britain, the United States, and on and on and on. I mean, this is involving many, many countries in the world.
Right.
And there's also Chinese and Russian forces close by to the energy route being opened up in the Eastern Mediterranean. Now, look, Russia and China are permanent members of the U.S. Security Council, U.N. Security Council, excuse me. They are opposed to military initiatives in the Middle East, supposedly. They are challenging the oil interests of the United States in Central Asia and the Caspian Sea Basin. So how are they going to operate in this whole thing? What is their role?
And someone told me today that China now wants to have 1 million new automobiles a year, every year, to be driven in China. They want 1 million new automobiles a year on the road. Now, what does it take to fill automobiles? Gasoline, of course. Now, do you think China has a vested interest in what's happening in the Middle East? Do you think, especially considering all of the huge multi-billion dollar deals they cut with who? Iran. Do you think they care what's going on over there? So
Yeah.
You know, when you look at all these factors, Russia, China, Asia, South America, the Middle East, the United States, Great Britain, this truly is now a theater of a world war.
Right. And Israel, of course, is connected to both sides, to both theaters. It's an extension of the Anglo-American alliance, and it's also an extension of NATO. So we see with Syria, they also have been strengthening their military capabilities to defend themselves. Russia's been helping Syria upgrade its air defense systems. The Syrian military has been ordering Russian-made warplanes and also Iranian-made missiles. So Belarus and China are aiding the Syrian military, getting them prepped up, upgrading all their defenses for what's to come. God only knows what's to come. There's a significant buildup of military force, including naval power in Lebanon and the waters of the eastern Mediterranean.
Right. And Israel, mark my word, whoever wins in this upcoming war, whose side do you think they're going to go with, Lisa? Victor, of course.
Yeah, and the victor will be the one that writes the history books.
Exactly. And if you think they have any loyalty whatsoever to the United States, well, you're sadly mistaken. There are great ally, Lisa, our only ally in the Middle East. Well, I've never heard such BS in my life because they're always going to go with the one that comes out on top.
Right. And if you look deeper than what they're feeding you on the mainstream media reports or from the official government statements here in the United States and even from other governments around the world, you see there's a lot more going on, a lot more players involved in this strategic planning, the march toward war, the naval buildup, the presence in both of these theaters, and how many players are involved now, how many countries are involved, and Canada is even playing a bigger role than what they're officially reporting. They're supposedly saying that Canada's involvement and role is limited only to Afghanistan, but that's not true. Canada's playing a more active participatory role in these events.
Yeah. So this is the march to war. We don't have a crystal ball.
No.
We're not seers. We don't know when this is going to happen.
But we think it's safe to say that everything is not fine.
Right. Yeah. And many of these pieces have been put in place. They're still being arranged. And I can't say that the world is in a good situation right now, good condition whatsoever. And one last thing I wanted to talk about, but we're going to delay this till another show. But I've done quite a bit of reading now about this concept of the 12th Imam and the president of Iran. And we're going to save this for another show so we don't have to rush through it. But what we have here is, again, religious fundamentalism, which reminds me, if you haven't voted in the Wing TV poll, do so. We're getting just fantastic response to this. And very intriguing because when I put this question together and we put it out on Wing TV, it probably was the one I was most uncertain of how the answers would fall. So it's very interesting. Go to the Wing TV homepage. You'll see that.
You know, it's very easy. When somebody comes out on TV and is being presented as the benign good guy, to fall for that, especially when we already have our perceived enemy in George Bush and his administration, and we're looking for the good guy in the whole scenario. And then one comes forth and he's being presented in a certain way, and we already don't trust our media, we already don't trust our government, but we have to be very careful. Because all the people that are in place in political power are there because they gave something up. They forfeited something to get where they had, you know, want it to be, where they are now.
You don't get on the global stage by accident, and these people don't just open their doors. When Lisa mentions good guys, here's the way I look at it. There are no good guys when it comes to these global leaders.
Well, what I'm thinking is we can't be looking for any of them to be heroes. There are no heroes.
At least on the global stage.
No. The heroes have already given up their lives fighting wars based on lies. And it's a damn shame that's exactly the way it is. But as far as the whole political framework and the whole political scene, there are no heroes there. There are none.
War, folks, get ready for it. We'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you all tomorrow.